Heyo, and here we go. It is episode 102 of We Talk Comics. Episode one now. The We Talk Comics, the superior We Talk Comics, all new now, unlimited.
That sounds about right.
Oh, and the extra subtitle, Never the Real Thing. this is part of the new relaunched We Talk Comics, which is keeping legacy numbering and starting from number one at the same time.
Every episode.
Yeah,
and
I'm going to take the Hawkeye. And next week will be the Hawkeye plan, so we'll go to 104 and then go back to 103. Because 103 wasn't ready, we might as well just put 104 out. We've got a different allotment of hosts this week. I am Keith, the Superior Mo, and also joining me this week is regular co-host Chris.
I guess that would make me the Amazing Mo,
and Superior friend of the show, Matt, Photo Cub on Twitter.
Yep.
And at our friend at Comicosity.
Yeah, that would probably make me Secret Hall.
Nice. All right. Well,
I left you the best name, Matthew Griffin, Spectacular Mo.
Spectacular Mo. They haven't used Spectacular in a while.
And
it's all about Amazing.
They haven't
now.
Used and Peter Sam- Parker Spectacular in a long, even longer time. I miss Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man. I love that title. Focus more on the. It focuses on the supporting cast rather than Spider-Man.
And there's not enough books that start with the letter P. I mean, it was always like little tiny writing, and it got sorted in the wrong spot all the time. Trying to find back issues, it was under P, it was under S, it was under a giant box of Spider-Mans. You never knew where to find it. All right, well, we are back with We Talk Comics, and we're gonna do news, some Wii views, and a bit of chat about a little speech that Eric Stevenson gave at Comics Pro a couple of weeks ago that has continued to have rumblings throughout the Twitterverse and throughout the comic industry. Let's start with news. Now, the news is sponsored by a great website.
Who's it sponsored by?
Matt, can you tell us a little about the sponsor of the news?
So I believe that the news, the weekly news from Cover Quarter K, is sponsored by Comicosity. Comicosity.com is your place to get news, reviews, interviews, lots of goings on strictly in the comic book community.
So if I want to know rumors about the casting of Man of Steel, where am I going to find incorrect information on that?
That would be a bleeding cool.
On literally any site except Comicosity.com.
Pretty much.
All right, and this is where Brett puts in a cool sound effect that I absolutely love. And then we get into the news. So we're just coming out of South by Southwest 2014. And we were just talking before we started recording about the crazy amount of free comic books that were given out by Comixology. As well, there was the Submit Starter Pack celebrating 1 year of Comixology Submit. They packed up 100 comics for $10, which included some terrific books. I don't know if I really got my $10 worth. Considering how many I had already bought, but probably 85 comics for $10 is still a pretty good deal.
I could use a little bit of warning on the South by West South by Southwest thing. I was in Mexico running around trying to find McDonald's for a Wi-Fi freaking connection.
I gotta get 3G
three
on
or
that.
Four
on
because
that
they were so busy.
Price.
Oh. Yeah. I needed to get these books, though. Of course, now that I'm looking at them, I don't even know which ones they were anymore.
I know. I picked up so much that weekend, like over the weekend, that because my app only shows you the last 50 things that you got. So, I hit download all, and then I had to start scrolling through. Okay, I think this one's new. Okay, added March 8, added March 8, added March 8. Track down all those other ones as they just filtered into my alphabetical. And because I got all 700 of the Marvel ones last year, that's a messy list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't take advantage of that either. Yeah, I felt like I was so far behind on so many things I've already bought that I just sort of let this weekend fly by me. I may regret it later, but I'm sure I'll have you guys to tell me how much.
Well, there were certainly a couple of for the freebies, there were a lot of trades in it, actually. My Little Pony was a trade. Lock and Key.
One I bought last week, surprisingly.
Adventure Time. Think Tank.
What's worse than admitting you bought My Little Pony? It's admitting it when you could have got it for free.
You overpaid for for My Little Pony. Oh, that's great. I'm not going to pay too much. I've paid too much for My Little Pony already. All right. And Marvel has announced changes to their digital apps. They were pushing a lot of their digital content last year at South by Southwest, going so far as to crash Comixology for the better part of that week, which, although I love free comics, I was glad it didn't happen this year. But they announced that the Marvel AR app is getting updated, and will have a lot different, more content. Will include a list of what books have AR content in them, which I've been kind of wanting for a while. And
I have the update, and it's not all AR books that have the bonus content. It is just the new AR books that are being added to the app, and not even all the new.
So bugs still to work out, and
there's like 30 books
not
right now.
Compatible.
So has that AR interface gotten any better? Because I know that for the first year or so, it was really difficult for people to use.
As far as the Marvel Unlimited app works, it works a whole lot better because you don't have to try to hold your iPad over a comic book and get it. But I've only been successful at doing that three or four times. I gave up on trying. The content wasn't worth my effort.
That's kind of
okay. Yeah, because the AR stuff doesn't pop up in Comixology, does it? It's only in Marvel.
No, and that's the other thing they're working on is changing the way that some of the content works inside. Is it just the Unlimited app that's getting the sound effects and everything?
I'm actually been having trouble downloading the update to the actual Marvel app. The Marvel Unlimited app, I didn't have a problem with. It was the one I was concerned with, because I figured after South by Southwest that they'd add a whole lot of books. There's a lot of books missing on the Marvel Unlimited app that I really want. Hercules, Prince of Power. How could that not be on the app? That has the app written all over it. Bob Layton at his best. I've been pissed off about that one for a long time. I thought, okay, yeah, this is the end. But no. 11 books this week, man.
Well, I was frustrated when I went to see what New Universe books were on there, and only the ones collected in trade paperback. are on the...
Because those are probably the only ones that are
scanned. Exactly why. They're the only ones that have been cleaned up. And unfortunately, those trades were ridiculously overpriced. So they never did any more of them. They were just insane. Like, you know, $30 Canadian for 7 issues of stuff that I've been pulling out of 25-cent bins.
Just
but brutal. Then why was it new Universal should be on there? Because that was
collected. I think Universal have that trick. Yeah. It's the original stuff. I mean, because the early stuff also, I mean, aside from 15 or maybe 20 issues, none of it's collected anywhere. I mean, if I was in charge, there'd be 8 essential collections that would just sit next to each other on the shelf. But
if you were in charge, Brewster Gold would have a book.
Well, I'd have to be in charge of Marvel and DC for this whole plan to work. But all right, well, let's get
aim high.
that was my favorite. Every once in a while, I'll search on Twitter just for references to Booster Gold, looking for new people to follow. And I came across someone who bugging a guy who said that Booster Gold was always awful. But there was someone else that someone had responded to that guy that said Booster Gold's always awful with, yeah, Booster Gold ruined Civil War. And as near as I could tell, he was being serious. I looked back over trying to find, you know, hints of sarcasm in what he was saying, but no.
I don't even know who in Civil War could possibly be confused with Booster Gold. Sentry?
Oh, that could be it.
It's not an obvious.
It doesn't even sound like a Marvel.
Sentry did wreck Civil War.
It doesn't even sound like a Marvel name, though, does it? Like, it's kind of like a specifically DC character name.
Yeah,
Marvel characters just don't have that kind of sound to the character names. But I regress. All right, and speaking of Booster Gold, there's been some rumor hanging around the internet on it started on, is it 4chan? It started on this list of possible titles. One of these titles we know for sure is happening, but we're hearing rumors of 5 new books in June from DC. The one that is happening for sure is Infinity Man and the Forever People by Dan DiDio and Keith Giffen.
Yeah, I'm super pumped for this. The two of them were so
Kirby
awesome.
Forever People. The only way this could get better if they announced Jimmy Olsen Superman's pal. I can't. Forever People, man. It's going to rock.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know if you read OMAC when it first came out, but I loved that book. And if I had my way, that never would have been canceled. See, if I ran DC, would not have been canceled.
The art on that book was so gorgeous. I really, really liked it.
And uniquely well put together for the iPad, too, because it had a lot of single-page spreads as opposed to double-page spreads. So it was really perfect for the iPad. It was really beautiful.
That's something, actually, that I predicted that still hasn't happened is a move away from the two-page spread. I've been expecting for a while that people would be – that, you know, the big two especially would move away from – 2 pages because of the iPad thing, but it just hasn't happened. Half the books I read today haven't.
Now, I think if you had seen print sales going down as opposed to going up over the last 2 years, then that would have happened. But they haven't. They've only gone up. So that doesn't seem like that much of a motivator.
Indeed. I want more sideways books. Which print readers apparently hated, but
I was pretty indifferent to it.
Darn, they look
it's
good.
Fine.
I read digitally though. I felt like they were double sized books. Actually, reading those Batman Superman issues that were sideways, because it just looked like everything was a 2-page spread. Yeah. A 2-page spread that I didn't have to zoom in to read all of the word balloons because they were properly sized.
So I hate to break it to
oh, no.
you, but
that's bringing me bad news.
So the 4chan rumor, now this of course is still speculation. So there's apparently a guy online that has the secret to figuring these things out in advance. Well, that is not the guy who posted the rumor on 4chan. The guy who's figured it out in advance apparently is claiming that that rumor was all made up. And because the rumor said that the issue that was coming out in June was Batman and Carrie Kelly. So Batman and Robin, Batman and Aquaman, whatever. And it in fact is going to be Batman and Ra's al Ghul. So he's taken this to blow away the entire rumor.
What's interesting, so we have like seven data points, one of which has been confirmed and one of which has been debunked.
Yes, although the title
it
isn't
no.
the same.
It could just be just a blind stab in the dark that got lucky.
It could have been a good guess. I mean, we knew it wasn't Commandi, because Dan DiDio, for those who didn't know, Dan DiDio teased this book a little bit before it was announced. Definitely there was a Kirby property. Definitely it was a cult favorite, but it wasn't Commandi. Well, you know, Mr. Miracle's on Earth 2, and, you know, is it going to be Newsboy Legion? I mean,
I want that book.
I know. I thought maybe Hunter, but yeah, Forever People is as good a guess as any.
Holy Rip Hunter, I don't even know how that would translate into the new 52.
Rip Hunter.
I think we lost you just for a second there. I think Matt said Manhunter.
Rip Hunter, I thought he said.
Oh, no, I said Manhunter.
Oh.
But Rip Hunter would be cool, too.
Well, this.
I mean, I gotta believe that if Booster Gold's coming, and I do believe Booster Gold is coming, I just don't know if it's coming in June.
And I don't know if he's going to show up in his own book. We also saw this past week or so the pitch document for a Booster Gold series, a new 52 Booster Gold series that was turned down. And a lot of folks, you know, I had no emotion connected to it. I mean, it's not like the book was solicited and then canceled. You know, it was a neat idea for a booster that would be time traveling in the new 52. But really, it was a pitch by someone who a writer I'm not familiar with, who was going to be introducing a new IP every issue, including Commandy. It was kind of a ridiculous idea as far as, you know, the realities of how they're reintroducing characters.
Well, and that's the thing about the business of it is, you know, yes, I'm sure many, many fans would love to see that book and Booster Gold meeting Commandi one week and Detective Chimp the next week and Tommy tomorrow and then whoever else. But the reality is that a lot of those characters are probably spoken for. Believe me, if Dan DiDio hasn't released a Commandi book, then and he's the biggest Commandi fan there is, then there's
okay,
a reason
who
why
the hell spoke for Detective Chimp.
Hey, I love Detective Chimp.
I do too. I'm just saying I don't see him in the new 52.
No,
I really don't think somebody is. I don't think Frank Miller came in and said I got dibs on that one.
Well, it could also be that nobody has a pitch in, but they're holding. You know, they're like holding characters aside for certain like chess
not
pieces.
Detective Chimp, man. That one's free and clear.
As James Robinson said a bunch of times, though, they learned from Lobo how bad an idea it was to just throw in a character. Like you, no matter who it is, they want to think out how they introduce a character. And six properties, no matter how obscure, in six issues, is not going to happen. So
no,
it was a neat concept, and it was, you know, it'd be a neat. It was like almost like a post-crisis concept.
Yeah, but it's putting it would be putting a lot of power into the hands of someone who's not really the one crafting the universe. So I think it's problematic at a truly. But, you know, yeah, cool idea. It would have been probably a really great idea in the old universe where everything sort of set in stone.
All right. Well, we'll see how many of these other dream titles come true. I am still expecting something Argus-y. I think that what Sterling Gates has been doing with the Argus miniseries in Forever Evil is just they're setting up too much, and I think for that to be something that just closes up.
Yeah, there's definitely been teases from Geoff Johns about the future of Argus and that they have a new leader, that it's not going to be Amanda Waller or Steve Trevor. But yeah, so I had a whole lot of fun last weekend coming up with and poking at other people about lists of who would be on a team led by Superman in Argus.
What'd you come up with?
My money on a leader would be Colonel Flagg. I don't think we've reintroduced him yet.
Now, although I don't know, what's the difference between Rick Flagg and Steve Trevor? I mean, is there enough narrative difference?
Well, that's been always my problem with Steve Trevor.
I would like to see Rick Flagg back on leading the Suicide Squad, with maybe like Vixen taking the Bronze Tiger role. But we'll see. That book's ending as well.
Yeah, and is the Waller just a one shot? Amanda Waller in Suicide Squad is just a one shot. So maybe it's transitioning to something else, or maybe they're finally going to get the.
Sure.
I mean, in the list of things they learned early on in the New 52, secret organizations, there are way too many, so they need to consolidate some of that stuff.
Yeah, but what I have to say about that though is there's no. More in the DC universe than there is in the real world. So, I mean, honestly, FBI, CIA, NSA, Homeland Security, on and on and on and on. It's the same.
All I know from the last year in DC, the Blackhawks are really good at keeping a secret, man.
That's still one of my...
They are so secret, they don't make appearance.
They've really got on the ground. Right? They're like, I mean, I think they learned from those early mistakes of having secret missions and spray painting your logo on the side of your plane. or super secret organization, but, you know, we've got a big bird spray painted on the side of it. So, you know.
Sure.
At a tourist destination. They took some pictures of us. How could that have happened?
I will say it's a pretty safe bet that no matter what the new books are, that we're going to see a Young Justice title, I would say.
When does Titans end? 30?
May.
30
or 31. It's an annual that ends it.
Just judging by the amount of material I see coming out right now as old trade paperbacks come out, I think we might get a Harley Quinn book.
We have a Harley Quinn book. We're in month.
Do we have a regular Harley Quinn book?
The Harley Quinn.
Yeah. That's
and
awesome.
It is quite fun.
That it's actually DC's, was it, second bestseller? Third?
Pick it up. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's in the New 52?
Yeah.
I am picking it up.
You should. It is really good. Really good. And I don't even like, I've never liked Harley Quinn ever, and I enjoy the crap out of that book. Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor are doing an amazing job. That third, is it the issue? The one with all the animals on the cover. Just one of the best comics I've read in a long time.
And for those that whine that the DC does not have any fun books, that is a super fun book. And a fun book that I am actually interested in because fun often means disposable to me. And, you know, it's just one that I actually get something out of. All right. Well, I didn't have anything else for news. There's movie stuff. We've seen the Flash costume. Chris, have you seen the Flash costume reveal?
I have to say it's a big who cares. It's exactly what I predicted it would be.
And then he looks like the Flash? Was that your was that what you want?
Yeah, he looks like the Flash.
I mean, my thoughts on it are you can't really tell what it's going to look like until it's lit and on screen. I mean, these photos of it aren't going to do anything.
I actually like they announced that the Flash was going the Flash from the 1990s program was going to make a couple guest appearances.
Yeah.
Or the actor who played him. I thought that was a pretty fun move.
They haven't announced who he's playing yet, have they?
No. I mean, if I had to guess, I'd guess Barry's father.
Yeah, I know those. I mean, given his age, they were you know, either Barry's father or possibly like a variation of Jay.
Yeah, that seems a little odd to bring that character in so
early.
Seems
like a stretch, but
yeah. No, I'm a little like I'm kind of indifferent to the costume. It'll be whatever it's going to be. It's fine. But what I actually like most about what I've seen of the Flash is that he's actually smiling, which you haven't really seen in a DC live action anything in a long time. Superman doesn't smile too much in Man of Steel. Batman almost never smiles. Green Arrow doesn't really smile. Flash is going to smile.
Green Arrow smiles more when he's around the lovely Felicity Smoke. I love that character, and I just love saying Felicity Smoke. It's a fun name to say.
Actually, I don't know if you guys are watching Arrow this season, but have you detected a definite lighter tone than the first season?
I've only watched two episodes because I'm really behind, but it's like the only thing on my DVR right now. So, I'm determined to watch it. But yeah, I noticed. I don't know about it being lighter, but I noticed a huge uptick in quality like right away for season two.
Yeah, they really went into it with a plan this season. They cut some of the rough edges of the cast at the end of the first season. A couple of characters they've introduced are really strong. They've found something for Roy to do, which is great. I think it's a nice mix right now. Like the dark stuff is much darker.
And I love their take and the actor they got playing Bronze Tiger. Black Dynamite.
Yeah, some good casting. And just the dynamics of the characters has really kind of stepped up and. It's really gotten tight, and I'm really enjoying the Black Canary in it. So you'll have a nice summer TV marathon. have a whole season to watch.
Yeah. Well, I just finished House of Cards, and I just finished True Detective, so maybe that's next.
Nice. I missed the news cycle that 4chan rumor was debunked because I was off Twitter avoiding the end of True Detective. Did not want to, did not, that was like spoiler terror right there. The end of True Detective.
Right. Well, look at it this way. I find it really hard to believe that there's only going to be one new book in June. So. There's probably something else out there. We just have to find out what it is.
All right. Well, and that's the news. Mo makes this look so much easier. He's going to get a swelled head. If he ever listened to the show, then he's going to get his ego already needs one of those guys at the airport with the lit batons to move it around.
Oh man, don't say that. I already sent him a email praising his work on the We Talk Comics special with Fred Van Linte, which is an awesome interview. He did a bang up job there.
I'm looking forward to hearing that. I haven't
no praise for Mo. He needs to be put in his
place. I haven't had a chance to listen to that one yet. I've listened to about half of the Scriptments episode, which I thought was as funny to listen to as it was to do. It was certainly the most fun we've had doing a show in quite a while.
I would say actually this interview blows that away. Really, we get some teasers on some new books. Really looking to Archer and Armstrong. The only problem is Mo talks way too much about Archer and Armstrong, the claim series. Just won't shut up. A 30-year-old book won't shut up. No one bought it in the first place.
The first like 7 issues are brilliant. Then Barry Windsor Smith like got annoyed with Valiant and quit, and that was that. And he just went into the toilet. But we'll let Mo speak his piece about his beloved Valiant.
No, but this wasn't even Valiant. This is when they went to Acclaim, where they had Archer and Armstrong fight robot presidents and crap.
I don't even remember that one, to be honest. All right, well, let's get into our topic for the night. Now, we called this episode one of the 5 titles, the least tweetable title of an episode that we've ever had. One of the titles is Never the Real Thing. We're, of course, talking about image publisher Eric Stevenson's speech to Comics Pro members and publisher representatives. This is an event that happens annually and is a retailer event where retailers and publishers talk about the industry and talk about how to grow the industry and, you know, some years how to save the industry. Matt, did you want to jump in here?
Sure. You know, I've never been to one, obviously, because I'm not a retailer, and frankly, I've never actually paid much attention because I'm not a retailer. And so, one of the things that I just sort of have to get out there first is for all of those fans who were deeply offended by Eric Stevenson's comments, they weren't for you. This was not a speech to fans. This was not a public arena, and it wasn't a massive webpage or tweet out. It was a businessman trying to sell his company to the people who spend money to buy his stuff. And the reality of all of this, and this is sort of a mantra for me in a lot of ways, is that comics are a business. And yes, we don't need to be involved in that business to enjoy it. Some people think they do, but I think I enjoy it much less knowing about the sausage than otherwise. But that would be my first big thing. That, you know, if you look at it from the perspective that Eric was, you know, really boosting his own line and talking about what Image does best, which is a lot of really great things, it makes total sense. That it was reprinted on Bleeding Cool or wherever else is really irrelevant.
All right, so I think that's a good caveat. Now, I think we can have discussion about kind of some of the salient points in it without it being, because I don't think there's anything in this that is directed against the buyer of comics. And a lot of people did take it that way, that particularly that phrase, never the real thing. I saw that one line pulled out of this. I printed it off today and then left the print off at the office. It was a 9-page single space document. And these three lines are what really kind of stuck with people, was the never the real thing bit. But I think what he's talking about how to grow the industry, where the industry can expand, that is a publisher area, but it's something that we've talked about quite a bit on the show. This dream of where are the new readers coming from? People have been talking about how to get young readers involved in comics for the entire time I've been reading comics. If you read the Marvel Untold, the Untold History of Marvel Comics, which is a brilliant book on the history of Marvel as a business, they talk about guys in the 70s complaining that kids aren't reading comics anymore. And it's really a college kid, and up. It's a 20s and 30s readership. And what a problem that is, because the industry will die off if that's your core readership. Guys in the late 70s that thought they were just running out the last days of comics because everyone that was picking them up was, 22. So I think it was, to me, what was interesting about his take was that he was talking about the new reader as a new adult reader, which is not something we see very often. And I'm not positive he's right, but I don't dismiss it either. He specifically talks about, because it is Image, he's going to push his stuff. He specifically talks about Walking Dead and Saga as entry point books. And he does specifically talk about superhero books as the wrong entry point books. Or more specifically, that people know a Superman comic exists. They know a Batman comic exists. They have a picture in their head of what that is. They've decided whether it's of interest to them or not.
I think that's a fair point. I mean, honestly, if you've hit 40 and you've never read a Superman comic in your life, you've had lots of opportunity. Why start then?
So the elusive new reader. When I first read his speech, I was really taken with it. And then I started thinking back to everyone I know who reads comics, though. Because what he's saying is, and at first I was taken with, if I was going to get one of my peers, if I wanted to introduce one of my peers into comics, I absolutely would not pick a superhero book. Would either of you?
Actually, I was thinking about this, and I would not introduce somebody to a superhero book the way they are right now. I don't think the two major publishers do enough to incorporate everybody into the choices of a book. I love what Wonder Woman is right now, but I can't give that to a female reader. It's not written for her right now. I think that character actually is criminally underused. They should develop Wonder Woman into a female Superman of some sort. There just aren't enough superhero books that have their own continuity that I could give somebody and have them enjoy. Meanwhile, there are a ton of creator-owned books that I have sitting on my shelf that I can go, here, read this. It's six issues. It's not a huge time commitment. It doesn't connect to anything else. You don't need to know 30 years of backstory. Superheroes don't have that too much. The closest I can think of off the top of my head is Deathmatch from last year, which I actually really enjoyed. But once again, it's violent. It has a lot in it that could turn off a reader. I don't think there is a superhero book, period, that incorporates what I love about comics into one thing. There isn't a superior book.
I think there are a few superhero books that I would probably hand off to the right person. I don't know that it would be my first thought. I mean, for my dad's birthday last year, I gave him Underwater Welder, the graphic novel by Jeff Lemire, and he loved it. So at Christmas, I started buying him the Sweet Tooth trades, and I gave him his last one for his birthday just a few weeks ago, and he's loving them. He was reading them Christmas morning, sitting there. So that's the kind of book. I think you're right, Chris. I think it has a closed continuity. It is what it is. It's a little bit, it's for my dad, for instance. I chose it because he's really always loved the Twilight Zone, and he loves things like that. So the idea of giving him something that would, maybe speak to that would be pretty good. Would I give him Green Arrow? I'm not sure. Would I give someone else Green Arrow? Maybe, because it is kind of a closed book. The art's beautiful. But I, you know, I don't know who that would be. Wonder Woman, I actually, you know, it doesn't cross over with a whole lot of stuff, if anything. But you'd have to be like the right, you'd have to be someone who's already a little interested in superheroes, but maybe not, you know, like the traditional version of them.
But if you want somebody to enjoy something, you know, that pitch has already been made. Movies and TV have made the superhero pitch. So obviously I'm going, I have to think out the box to pull somebody into our weird little world.
Well, isn't that why Sandman was so successful?
Yep. And Fables, for that matter.
Sure. And actually, Eric mentioned Fables, which I thought was kind.
Yeah, he does specifically mention, outside of Image, he talks about Rachel Rising, Fables, Love and Rockets, and then a couple of specific creators as well. I mean, he's really pushing Saga. I mean, Saga is a huge success story.
That's his big book, the one that sold more every month up until the last issue. Every issue sold more than the issue before it.
One of the spots that I think, though, the part of his argument that I think doesn't hold water for me is, clearly there's a disconnect of the superhero movies drawing people to superhero comics. Now, everyone thinks that this should work. It theoretically should work. It's why they rearrange comic stories to, you know, it's why Superior Spider-Man is ending right before Amazing Spider-Man 2 comes out, and then immediately they're going into a Peter Parker as a kid storyline. But it hasn't worked since 1989. So do they keep doing it? And that is one of the things he's saying. But I think that only works for I think his discussion only works for superhero books. I mean, there's probably a myriad of reasons why it doesn't work for superhero books, but it works for everything else.
You mean somebody sees like the Walking Dead TV show and they'll go into the shop and buy Walking Dead.
And he kind of bends over backwards to make Walking Dead an exception to his argument that these TV and movie properties won't bring people into your stores.
Well, to be honest, Walking Dead is an exception. I mean, the success of that book is unheard of. And the TV show, I mean, you know, Robert Kirkman first left Marvel and went on his tirade about everyone should do creator-owned comics only. You know, the bottom line is not everyone is going to be as successful as Robert Kirkman on Walking Dead. Even Robert Kirkman's not as successful as Robert Kirkman on Walking Dead with his other properties. You know, it's just something that caught the zeitgeist and people just love. And, you know, that's not going to happen with everything. I think it is kind of an exception. But why do people turn off their TV and go to a comic shop and buy that book and not, say, Batman or Superman? I think it has a lot to do with that. You know, people have, like Chris was saying, people have grown up with Batman. People have grown up with Superman. If you were going to be into that, you'd already be into it. But nobody's seen Walking Dead before.
Now, this brings us to that phrase, the real thing. I'm going to read just a little section here. The Walking Dead comic book was selling great before it was a TV show. Now it sells even better. And this is true. Walking Dead, I looked up the numbers a year before the show premiered, 12 months before, Walking Dead was selling about 24,000 copies, which for an indie is really good. I mean, now it sells 68, 69, something like that. But it was selling it was very successful. And a couple of people have said, oh yeah, like what was selling great? Like no one had ever heard of it before the TV show, which isn't true. I mean, it was selling well.
No, that's not true.
Now it sells even better. And that's because the show made people aware of the comic, and those people came to your stores to get that comic because they want the real thing. Transformers comics will never be the real thing. G.I. Joe comics will never be the real thing. Star Wars comics will never be the real thing. Those comics are for fans that love the real thing so much they want more, but there's an important thing to understand. They don't want more comics. They want more of the thing they love.
Well, so let me ask you two guys this, and this is totally, I mean, I'm being totally honest. Have you ever loved a Star Wars comic as much as you love Star Wars A New Hope, the movie?
No.
Nope.
Have you
In fact,
ever?
I've gone on record saying I'm not a fan of property books at all. I don't buy them. I think the art looks weird when you try to get an actor's face in there.
Yeah.
If it's a comic book before, I will go back and read that comic book if I like the movie or whatever. Even if I don't, Bulletproof Monk is a wonderful comic book. Not a good movie.
I mean, let me ask you this. Have you ever loved the version of the comic book you loved when you were 12 as much as you loved it when you were 12? I haven't. Like, so for instance, when
now,
I was
now
12.
Now you're just talking shit about Secret Wars. Why would you do that?
I'm saying, if they redid Secret Wars today, you would not of Secret Wars as much as you love Secret Wars when you were 12.
I was thinking the other day, as yet another person was complaining about the pace of Forever Evil, the publishing pace of it, because it started in July and it wraps up here in the middle of April. So it's a fairly sizable length of time. And if you're a Marvel reader, there's like four events have taken place. Well, Trinity War started in July. It's been a straight throw from the beginning of Trinity War. So Trinity War, sure. July and August, and then Forever Evil started in September. It wraps up the middle of April. Now, if you're a Marvel fan, that there'll be four events in that length of time. So from that perspective, yeah, it's taking a long time. But then I thought back to Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was 12 issues monthly. Secret Wars, that was 12 issues monthly. Secret Wars 2, which was 9 issues monthly. We are so spoiled with these, like, you know, 8, 10, 8, 12 week events now.
Well, it's true.
Oh man, I remember Secret Wars being Secret Wars 2 was the longest series ever.
It was.
Oh, because it affected everything for those
How
9
many crossovers
months.
Is it? Like 50 odd tie-ins for that book. I had them all.
Ridiculous number. Yeah, and really, most of them were just a guy in a white suit shows up on one page.
Well, it's like the Red Skies and Crisis. Yeah, I mean, there were a few of those crossovers that weren't so important. I would not go back and collect those specially.
No, getting back to the real thing, Star Wars. I absolutely agree with you. I think he fails on the other two examples, and I think he could have picked better examples for his argument. G.I. Joe, for my age group, it was one of the most successful intro books ever. I know, like, when we did the roundtable at the summit last, like half the people, because they're, you know, 30s, like everyone was kind of around mid 20s to mid 30s. Almost the entire table said G.I. Joe was one of the first books they ever read. And the reason that this doesn't work in his analogy is that he thinks of G.I. Joe as a movie or a cartoon. Toy tie-ins do work. And toy tie-ins still work.
Yeah. But here's the thing.
The real thing, G.I. Joe, the comic book was real. I remember watching that freaking cartoon show, and this is stupid.
Yeah,
the book was the real thing to me. The book was advertised along with the toys, and the show, that was nothing. That was a bastardization.
The real interesting thing for me, though, is the G.I. Joe comics today are trying to be the real thing, which is the G.I. Joe comic from the 80s. If that was the real thing, the books now, I find it very hard to believe that there's a kid out there who 30 years or 20 years from now is going to say, oh yeah, that G.I. Joe comic I bought in 2014 is the reason I read comics today. Because there's not the television show and there's not the toys that got you to read the comic book, or at least got you interested. There was a whole lot going on for G.I. Joe. And I will totally agree, the comic book was the best thing out of all that. But I don't know if today, I mean, I hate to throw stones at, you know, it nothing is ever as good today as it used to be. But that's kind of Eric Stevenson's point too. I mean, I don't know about Transformers, because my experience with the Transformers was I played with the toy and I watched the cartoon. And would any book that I would read today give me as much pleasure as playing with that toy and watching a cartoon? Probably not.
And what happened though with G.I. Joe, and it's, I accept your point on G.I. Joe comics now, because I think that what they're really playing to is the nostalgia of G.I. Joe comics 25 right. years ago. What worked about the G.I. Joe comic, and what, I mean, one of the big success stories of last year is My Little Pony. And My Little Pony, primarily a toy. Yes, there's a cartoon, but primarily a toy. What G.I. Joe had, and the reason, Chris, why you and I think of the comic as the original thing, I mean, yes, it did come before the cartoon. The cartoon is heavily based on the comic. But we got these toys that had no narrative attached to them. These were toys that were not based on a movie. They were created whole cloth. You invented your own story. When you looked at this at Snake Eyes, the guy dressed all in black, like, you knew what a ninja was. It said on the back, like, this guy's a ninja. The comic was your way to get the narrative of these guys. It was the way to get to continue that experience. And My Little Pony's like that. Like, My Little Pony takes the toy line and goes that extra step.
So let me ask you, why do you think Eric Stevenson didn't mention My Little
Pony? Because it doesn't work in his argument, I think, is the number one reason why he doesn't mention it.
But I think it's different, because I don't think that the reason My Little Pony is successful today is because everyone played with the toy 20 years ago. I think it's because adult men sit and watch the cartoon today. It's like Adventure Time. It's the same reason Adventure Time is popular. I think the nostalgia factor is out for My Little Pony, but I don't think it's out for G.I. Joe. It's just that the thing that's we're nostalgic for is the comic.
Well, I'm gonna bring in the words of a special guest who doesn't know he's going to be on the show, Ted Adams, publisher of IDW, responding to this speech on the subject of My Little Pony. My Little Pony has brought in tens of thousands of new readers to comic shops. I've been traveling a lot in the U.S., and every city I visit, I stop into the local shops to learn what's working and what isn't. Every single store I visited tells me that My Little Pony comics have brought kids into their shops in a way that no other title has. This has led many stores to start or increase the size of sections aimed directly at kids. It's, in case it's not obvious, over time, kids reading comics turned into teenagers and adults reading comics. We all had to start reading comics somewhere, and even though those comics aren't real in Eric's world, they are the kids who love them. So I mean, clearly IDW thinks that it's kids and not male adult fans of the show that are picking these up.
Yeah, well, I think he's leaving out half the story there, because There's no way that kids under 10 are floating that book with those numbers. And I will totally agree. I'm sure it's bringing in kids under 10, but it's bringing in kids under 10 on the backs of adult men. And that's why, and maybe women. I don't know. I don't know any women who read My Little Pony. I only know guys. But, you know, that book wouldn't survive without both audiences. Or maybe just the male audience. But it's great. I totally agree. It's great. It's bringing kids in. My nieces love it. And that is a book that is important for, I think, for getting kids interested in comics. But the reason why it's financially successful is not because kids are buying.
Nope.
It's a tough sell to get a $3.99, 20-page book in the hands of an 8-year-old kid.
Now, Chris, as an adult male who buys My Little Pony, maybe you could speak to this. Maybe so. This might be the worst focus group to bring this point of debate. Chris, you have to settle the discussion between Matt and I, given that you are an adult male who's buying My Little Pony.
Yes. I actually sort of side with Keith on this one. I don't think we get people coming into comic book shops without an attached property, no matter how good a My Little Pony comic book would be. So, I really think as long as quality is there, I take the speech as more of a image mission statement than an actual statement of the industry or even something he believes.
Sure. Well, I mean, and again, that goes back to my original point. It's business. I mean, he's not there to sell IDW's My Little Pony. I mean, he's there to make sure that people buy more Image comics. And
that
good
said,
for them.
I think they're. I mean, they have a lot of creative stuff, but I don't see them aiming at other than Walking Dead, which I think we can all agree is the exception to the rule. I don't see any of their other books trying to broaden the comic book audience at all. I see them picking up creators that are popular at other publishing companies doing exactly what they do, superhero stuff. Just moving it to another genre, I think that sort of blows a hole in his entire argument, is just switching genre. I mean, I don't see Image doing anything different other than a genre change. I really think we have to look at, if he was serious about broadening comic book audiences, I think he'd be looking under new rocks rather than the old ones.
I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, he has to make it successful. And so, I mean, that's the reason why. And although I do think he does bring in some, you know, unknown talent occasionally, or at least some underknown talent. But I mean, he's got to make the buck somehow, and that's, you do that by bringing in the Ruckas and the Fractions and the Brubakers and whatnot.
Kelly Sue DeKarma getting another?
Well, I think we should remember how Image is structured too. There's Image, the giant eye, and then there's the individual imprints. You know, Shadowlines specifically, which is Jim Valentino's, has a strong commitment to new creators, new voices. You know, that's where we get Rat Queens and a lot of, like, Proof was under Shadowline. Peter Panzerfaust is under Shadowline. That's where those newer voices are coming from. Snyder's book and Kelly Sue DeConnick's books, those are all in the main Image brand. And, you know, they're, thankfully they, I mean, Image could very well be a vanity press for, you know, creators that are doing well outside. It hasn't really developed that way. I mean, it has that danger at all times, though. So I like supporting, you know, Shadowline because it has, it's the ones doing, you know, like, bringing in these new creators as opposed to, you know, someone who wants to play around with a creator-owned book.
Well, I think both goals are fine. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, yes, bringing over Brubaker or DeConnick or whatever, that's just bringing existing fans over to those books. But those existing fans have friends and they share stuff and they, you know, I mean, it's like anything else. It's just that what's being produced there is probably a little more shareable than what maybe DC or Marvel are putting out on a monthly basis. It doesn't make better necessarily. And I think that's what people really felt about his speech, is that he was trying to put down superhero comics or put down G.I. Joe comics. I mean, and I think part of that is that people are reading in their own fears into a text that they're not sitting in a room listening to as a speech. It's meant as a speech. You know, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, it's all good stuff. You know, Eric's trying to get shops to recognize that they could probably pull in more people, you know, based on that sort of Sandman type book than they could Superman or Spider-Man. He's probably true. Probably right.
Yeah, isn't it?
But is that going to make the bank for these retailers? Probably not.
Yeah, and that's the harsh part of it is that as successful, I mean, even as crazy successful as Walking Dead is, it still sells about two-thirds what Batman does as a monthly book. I mean, it certainly knocks everything out of the park with its collections. The exception, like Saga and Walking Dead, have just stolen the top 10 every month through the comic stores. We don't see what it is through bookstores, though. I do know that Walking Dead does very, very well in bookstores without seeing numbers because I know
They
Chapters and
all
Indigo
have
here
it.
in Canada, yeah, they absolutely have it. And the last bunch, like before Christmas, I was seeing signs on the graphic novel section that said Walking Dead on a table at the front. I worked in those stores. That's not because I worked in a Chapter store 10 years ago. I know that Chapters would be equivalent of Barnes and Noble, I guess. It's the biggest book chain in Canada. They have their own ebook reader program, the whole bit. So probably that'd be the equivalent for our American listeners.
Yep, Barnes.
The decisions of what goes on a display at the front are not someone in the stockroom who really likes Walking Dead. Those come from head office and they give you a diagram of the store and they tell you Walking Dead is on that table when you walk into the store. So that gives a sense of just how well that does. But monthly, as I said, it sells about two-thirds what Batman does. And, Saga is running maybe half what Batman does.
Which, by the way, is really amazing considering Batman for 75 years. I mean, people's grandparents read Batman. It's really exceptional. It's an exceptional success story.
My
But
sister
both of
just
those
informed me
stories.
that not everyone thinks Batman was cool, which was a complete shock to me. That not everyone shares my belief that Batman is the coolest thing ever.
Well, she's just wrong. So, and here's the other thing. Batman is never going to end. There will be Batman trades, book, whatever, 50 years from now. There won't be new Saga 50 years from now. There might be new Walking Dead. I'm not so sure about that. They're walking across that country. That it could easily go on for 100 years. But Saga is a limited story. So every time Brian K. Vaughan wants to write a new book, he has to do that whole thing all over again. And I'm sure it's easier every time, but that's a different challenge too. And I don't Mark Stevenson is kids referring to that because he's talking a lot about the future, but what he's really talking about is this year and what's selling hot for him this year. Saga's not going to be around 5 years from now.
No, second season of that Stephen King thing Vaughn is working on should be ramping up sometime. So we have to
Even know
end
what that.
Saga by then. Under the Dome, he was
Well,
head
and it's
writer on that.
interesting
Oh, that's still a thing.
I wrote a blog a couple of months ago on comparing comics to network tele superhero comics to network television, I had a lot of thoughts of what I wrote, it, reflecting on how what Stevenson was saying, and it really had this interesting bit of you can't break the superhero too much, the corporate-owned entity you can't smash up too much. Saga will eventually end, and if someone dies in Saga, well, that's just what the writer wanted and what the creators wanted, and the story will go on and then it will conclude. And Bob's your uncle. You kill someone in Batman, you have to deal with that for a long time, and then you have to retcon them back to life, and then you eventually decide that killing people in Batman's a bad idea because it's just a pain in the butt and no one really there's no drama left in it. But you got to put the toys back. So there's this framework built around it that it can never do what Saga can do.
But there is a reason superheroes are the meat and potatoes of the industry. Is, you know, I don't always have a creator-owned book on the go. I mean, most of the time I do. But it's the superhero serial crap that brings me back to the comic book store week after week. It's the meat and potatoes. It's not necessarily my favorite book, but I want to know what happens in Batman every week, every month. So
sure,
it is the linking mechanism for those times that I'm switching creator-owned books, because creator-owned books don't tend to run forever.
What were you saying there, Matt?
I mean, I'm the quintessential superhero. That's what I love, and I was on top of that. But they'll never replace my Justice League or my Batman or whatever. They just won't. But I'm not a new reader either. I've been reading for over 30 years, and I'm going to die eventually. I mean, maybe. So I do think there's some value to putting out new stuff and really giving that more of a focus. But, you know, but again, like you were saying, you know, people were complaining about the death of comic books in the 70s. That's like 40 years ago now. Hasn't died yet. Batman's still around. Superman's still around. Peter Parker's back.
I laughed so. At the very end of Stevenson's speech. He makes a reference to we want people buying comics from the comic stores. It's a really like super just suck up kind of line where he says we want all the comics bought from you. We don't want them bought at Target or on Amazon. We want them going into the stores. I sat at one of these retailer events for Styx was the distributor in probably 1993 and watched and listened to every retailer in the room terrified that Walmart was going to start carrying comics because it would be the death knell. Every comic store would close up the next day if Walmart started carrying comics at 20 points off cover like they did paperbacks. I just thought it was hilarious that, you know, yet again the threat of the big box store going to shut down all the comic stores.
Well, I think there is a threat for Amazon in that sense, because I buy most of my trades through Amazon, not my local comic shop. Sorry, Shanna. I think that pretending that Walmart or supermarkets or whatever are going to take away business from comic shops really kind of ignores the way that people discover comics. It's not, I don't know.
Like, it's an impulse buy. No one starts collecting comics on purpose. It starts as an impulse buy. And you know what? Walmart and like that, that's today's comic book shop rack.
It's
you need something to shut up the kid. Here's a Batman.
Sure, but I think that kind of stuff it also gets lost.
Discover new stuff.
Yeah, when you're in a comic shop, you're open to that possibility. I think when you're in a Walmart, I don't know. That's not why you're there. So I don't know. I guess that's a.
I think we. I mean, the comic collector destroyed that whole thing anyway. The reality of the newsstands is that. Newsstands only carry what you can make the margin on. You make crap off of a magazine if you're a newsstand distributor. You make like 20% or something because there's restocking fees, there's damaged product, the whole bit. Like your margin is terrible on them. So you have to be able to flip those. And what happened in the 80s is you could start buying comics at the comic store and they would be kept nice on the shelf. And then you went to the spinner rack and everyone is, you know, bent in half, the spine's destroyed from it sitting on the spinner rack, and you didn't buy it. You went to the comic store and bought it there. And then eventually enough comic stores were around that the spinner rack couldn't make their margin. It wasn't worth the square foot and restocking fee, and they disappeared. And then we all went, hey, why aren't they in the stores anymore?
Which, Well, and actually, I think that was a detriment to the comic shops. And I think that's part of Eric's point is that, you know, you did go there and you thumbed through them and then you went to a comic book shop and you bought a nice copy. Walgreens or whatever, the supermarkets weren't making their buck on your comics, but the comic shop was probably getting more business driving them to them. I think the same thing is sort of happening with Comixology. I mean, we've clearly seen that digital comics is not the death of print. And if anything, that people who buy digital comics are being driven to buying print in comic shops. I would never have predicted that, but that's honestly what happened. And I think everyone pretty much accepts that now. If Mark Miller accepts that, I think everyone accepts it.
I actually liked his little condolence speech he just gave while ago. That I was wrong. Yeah. No, he wrote a nice little piece, just totally conceding he was wrong on all counts.
I'll look that up. Great. He was like the lone holdout that digital would just as video killed the radio star, digital would kill the local comic shop.
That's right.
All right. Well, I think this horse is dead. We can move on to some Wii views. Because Keith.
Here I come to save the day.
Saving you
from
bad comics.
Thanks, Chris. I was trying to figure out how to do that myself. I'd give myself the lead into the tag. So we read some comics. I think Matt and I read 4 books. Chris read 3 books. I'm not sure I have an opinion on all of them. Chris, why don't you start with one?
Let's start with what I feel is the worst book of the week. The new Captain Marvel #1. Why does this book exist? It's the same team as the last incarnation. They just slapped #1 on it, and they didn't even have the courtesy of the little legacy numbers they are with the rest of the books. It wasn't even a good jump on point. Nothing really happened. They just sort of, you really could say, I can summarize the book by saying, Captain Marvel decides to go to space. The end. That is all that happens in those 22 pages. I hated this book.
All right. Matt, do you want to jump in on this one?
Sure. That pretty much sums up my entire feelings on the book. And I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this among many of our Carol Corp friends, but... And I will point out the parts that I thought really did work. What was the point of that book? I think the last 2 pages were the point of that book. I thought those were beautifully written. I thought the narration on the last 2 pages was really like almost poetic, really nice. But I thought that the art was really like the worst art I've seen from David Lopez in a long ever. And I really like his work. And I thought it looked rushed and unfinished. And honestly, like this is a #1, and I'm admittedly, I have a very high standard for #1s, and I probably shouldn't anymore, but I didn't know who half the characters were. I, of course I knew who Captain Marvel was. Of course I knew Iron Man and Iron Patriot, but other than that, I felt like I was thrown into a #13. And if I was reading a #13, that would be fine because I know what to expect. But it's completely unacceptable for #1. And I don't even know if I can blame the writer for that. I got to put the blame on Marvel. This book, they should have insisted that it was written like a #1 if they're going to do a #1. And I know why they needed a #1 because the book wasn't selling very well. But if this was a #13, I'd probably have a very different opinion of it. It's the worst comic I read this week because of that. I have no idea what's going on.
I had been reading Captain Marvel up until just when the crossover event happened. I tuned out and didn't come back to it. But I think I only would have missed what, 6-7 issues? And I still don't have the foggiest idea what's going on in this book. Like, I don't understand, like, all of the stuff that was interesting as a this is the new status quo of this character feels like it's not actually the status quo of the character. So, oh, she's living in the Statue of Liberty. Well, no, because she's leaving Earth. She's dating Rhodey. Well, no, because she's leaving Earth. Like this actually was the last issue of this has the last issue of the first volume made perfect sense, as the first issue of the second volume makes no sense. Looking at the art, I wonder if it was done from incomplete inks or just it was done from pencils, because it's only an art credit. There's no inking credit, and which would explain kind of the. It does have an unfinished quality to the art that it's. Yeah, maybe rushed, or maybe that it was just, it might have been printed from pencils as opposed to finished art, because it's up and down on various pages. The last origin, the page at the very end, the origin of Captain Marvel, which should have been at the very beginning, was cute. Yeah, it was cute. Should have been the first page of the book. There's probably about five pages of this book that should have been in this book. If it started with halfway through the book, if it started with Iron Man saying, hey, maybe someone should be in space, and then the origin thing, that's probably what actually belonged in this book. But I don't know how I can jump off a book I'd already jumped off of. I'd already decided to not keep going with Captain Marvel, and now I will continue to not keep going, I guess. That really turned me off the whole idea to start there.
I keep trying, because with Marvel Unlimited, it doesn't cost me anything. I keep trying to read the entire run of Captain Marvel just to catch up, because people keep telling me it's a really good book. I get bored every time after two issues. I've made like five runs of two issues each.
You know, I don't want to belabor this, but I did like the writing in the previous series, but when they changed the artist for the fourth time, I was done. Like that, and it was the worst change. Like I gotta step away from a book then, when the solution is, oh, we're gonna tie it into this other book that's not selling very well. I'm like, well, it's
the
it's
same
not
plan
a good
that
plan.
Destroyed Venom destroyed Captain Marvel. Yeah. I mean, Venom was the train wreck that was Circle of Four, where they tried to have an event with three books that were already canceled.
I also found it kind of suspicious they're reintroducing this the same, I think it's same week, maybe it was last week, that Miss Marvel launched.
Miss Marvel's been out for a couple of weeks.
Which, by the way, I love.
I enjoyed the first issue, yeah.
Miss Marvel 2 is out.
Miss Marvel 1.
Yeah. That book I love.
If you go to the Marvel app, I think the code still works. There's a four-pack teen heroes from Marvel, and Miss Marvel is one of the four. Miss Marvel, Nova, New Warriors, and something else are in that. And there's a promo code. The promo code is TEEN, T-E-E-N, and it gives you those four books for free on the Marvel's own app or on their website. Maybe you can only do it on the web. I did it on the website, so I don't know whether it works in the app or not. But yeah, you can read Miss Marvel number one for free. All right, Matt, pick a book.
Yeah, I have picked that. Well, just because we're on a little bit of a roll, and I know, Chris, you didn't read this one, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about Secret Avengers. And I'll try to be brief. I wasn't as disappointed
in
this as I was.
If it helps,
I've
hated every incarnation of Secret Avengers. In fact, I've hated every title that starts with Secret other than Secret Wars. So, Secret Defenders, hated that one. Secret Avengers 1, 2, and 3, I don't know what volume we're on now. Hated every last one of them.
Yeah, well, I've never read Secret Avengers before, but I wanted to give this a shot because I liked Alice Cott's Suicide Squad run. I love Jessica Drew. She's probably my favorite Marvel character outside of Cyclops. Like, the two of them are it for me, for Marvel. But I have to say I was pretty disappointed. I wasn't like appalled like I kind of was with Captain Marvel. But I was disappointed because it wasn't, I think it was trying to be funny and it wasn't. And to be fair, part of this is I'm not the big Marvel guy. So I don't know if Coulson is supposed to be stupid, but he seems really stupid. And Fury didn't seem much better, which was kind of a surprise to me. But I guess it's not the Fury from the Ultimates. It's this other guy. But the thing that really bothered me, and this is why I stopped reading Black Widow, is I think the voice on the women was totally off. I thought Black Widow was a little bit better, actually, than in her own title. But the idea that Jessica Drew would be palsy with any woman, when it's, frankly, I think her powers work against that, is really, like, just really grated on me. And she was sort of, like, trying to be funny because the book was supposed to be funny, but it just didn't raise the level of Hawkeye or Superior Foes or any of the actual funny books that Marvel's doing. The art I didn't love, but I can forgive that. It's certain style. I could totally live with that. But it just wasn't, I just didn't get it. I didn't get what the point of the book was.
I couldn't decide whether I liked it or not until about halfway through the book when Hawkeye was naked and they put a Hawkeye face over his genitals. And then I thought it was the stupidest thing I picked up in ages.
Which, by the way, was funny when they did it in Hawkeye.
Well, and then they do the same thing with Jessica Drew later on in the issue. It's
right. It's boob, yeah. I mean, okay, that could be funny, but it wasn't. Like, and, you know, the other thing, I've been trying all new Marvel now. I haven't been very vocal about it because, quite honestly, I've only liked two of them out of the, I don't know, 5,000 books that they've launched. And part of that's just I'm not a Marvel fan, but part of it is I think they've looked at what's succeeded and they're trying to duplicate it, but they're not doing it well. And I think that Secret Avengers is falling for that reason.
I thought it was stinky.
Yeah. The other book, by the way, that I do love, that all new Marvel now has put out. Oh, I should say, I do love Invaders and Fantastic Four. But the two books that really stand out for me are Ms. Marvel, so far. It's been one issue. And She-Hulk. I think She-Hulk is hilarious.
I haven't tried She-Hulk. I'm a big fan of Charles Soule, but no, I haven't tried it yet.
It's funny, and there's a monkey.
Chris is on Comixology now. He's getting it right now.
Yeah, I could stare at that monkey all day long. He's hilarious.
I am loving what Charles Soule is doing. Pretty much almost everything that he writes. I mean, he's just about to leave Thunderbolts, which sucks. I don't know if Thunderbolts continuing or is it done when he's done?
No, it's continuing, but didn't recognize the guys' names that are taking it over. So, but yeah, it's continuing. Don't worry. I mean, Charles Soule, he'll pick up four more books and.
You'll oh my God! See, he's just doing the business on Superman, Wonder Woman. That book is blowing me away.
Oh, that issue today. I'm actually talking to Charles Soule tomorrow. So by the time this posts, there will be an interview on Comicosity with Charles Soule about Superman, Wonder Woman. So check it out.
Oh, big fan of that. Yeah, For all of those that have had some political reason for not liking the Superman Wonder Woman relationship, eat it. This is the best DC book right now. It is just rocking it. Seriously. Easily the best Superman book since the relaunch. Though Greg Pak's doing some great work, it's still kicking ass on that. I will say the first time in my life that I'm reading a book with Wonder Woman as lead character. I couldn't even get into Wonder Woman when Perez was doing her at the peak of his career. So it's saying a lot. I've never dug that character. So, and I'm loving what he's doing. But on to reviewing books that we're reviewing as opposed to ones that we just like madly in love with. What do we want to do next? Let's do Magnus, Robot Fighter, I was disappointed. At no point does he fight Dave in this issue. This is the Dynamite, the Gold Key from Dynamite Comics. They will be eventually in the next very short while, Spectre, Master of the Atom, and they've already launched by Greg Pak. So these are all of the characters that had been at Valiant, but the licenses were at the rights were held by a separate company because they were Gold Key characters from the 60s and 70s. So all of these characters were a package that is now picked up by Dynamite. And this is Fred Van Lente and Corey Smith on art. Origin story of really starting from scratch with Richter. And I don't entirely know what happened in this book. it takes a left turn about 7 or 8 pages in, and then it's a bit of work to figure out, get your feet under you. But I dug it. I don't know if I dug it enough to keep going very long with it. It felt a little disposable. It felt a lot like stuff I've seen before, and in that it's probably volume 87 of Magnus Robot Fighter. Probably no surprise that I've seen a lot of it before. It was enjoyable, but not terribly memorable, I think is how I'll review it.
I'll go next. I really liked it, but I can see your point that there is a rather sharp left turn. I was expecting that because I listened to Mo and Brett's interview, so I was expecting it. I was able to make that turn. I really like it. I can't wait to see how they're going to connect two characters as diverse as Turok and Magnus Robot Fighter into a cohesive universe.
I want to, again.
And it could be argued that it was never done successfully before. But to start with these two diversity, these characters that far apart, I find actually amazing that they, like, why would you start with these two? I mean, Dr. Solar at least has some connection to anything else. This was actually the first Magnus Robot Fighter book I actually was able to read all the way through without, what the hell is going on? I mean, this book has to be, this title rather, not this book, has to be one of the most sporadic books of all time. I've never known what's happening in a Magnus book, and this one, you know what? I followed all the way through. I tended to enjoy it. I actually felt for the character. That's why the left turn is there. Character development. We have to spend some time with this guy before we get into the action elements. I thought that was well done. I'm definitely in for issue 2.
So I reviewed Turok the Dinosaur Hunter number 1 last month on a whim. I had a free afternoon, and I liked it a lot. And that, too, was a book that I had never read before, had no exposure to the character, just like I've had no exposure to Magnus Robot Fighter. You know, of course, I've heard the name, but I've never read the book before. And that book, too, Turok, had this sort of sharp left turn at the end. I really love both of these. I am going to keep reading both, but particularly Magnus Robot Fighter. I was really surprised. I went in expecting to just to like sort of, yeah, this is going to be another one of these, like The Shadow or whatever, Green Hornet, that I'm going to read and be like, you know, it's somebody else's book. But I was pretty into it. And, you know, it makes sense. There's a little bit of the shades of The Matrix to it, but in a good way. I don't think in a bad way, it was in a creative way. I thought the art was great. I've really been impressed by these Gold Key books. I mean, this is not my genre of reading at all, and both of these books have really grabbed me. So I'm definitely going to keep checking it out.
All right, well, that leaves us with one bust. Chris, do you want to start off with Stray Bullets Killers number one?
Really good book. I am fairly unfamiliar with the history of Stray Bullets. I believe this is a reintroduction in a parallel title because they're restarting also with Stray Bullets 37 or something. And my understanding is Stray Bullets is a bunch of parallel stories happening and all at the same time. That said, this one issue holds up really well all by itself. You don't need any extra reading to actually get a real kick out of this book. I really enjoyed it. I thought this is graphic storytelling at its best. I'm all in on this one right off the bat. I can tell right off the bat that it's going to get deeper and deeper, and that's the thing I like when I can enjoy a story on multiple levels, and I can't wait to get into this sucker.
Well, I'll go next. I'd never read an issue of Stray Bullets. I know that there's a freebie on Comixology that I have downloaded and still not read, sitting amongst the...
I believe there's four, room. Actually, the first four issues of... Stray Bullets. I've downloaded them also, right. And just flipped through them. But
something else to put on the list. It's a very, very noir. Having read this, you know, 2 days or the day after watching the finale of True Detective, certainly I'm in a bit of a noir crime frame of mind. I dug this. It's very simplistic art, but I've been on a kind of non-superhero comic kick lately, and this fit very much with what I've been reading. You know, very much in the kind of would sit nicely on the shelf next to Criminal and a few books like that. So I'm into this, and I'll be going back to check out the volume one. That I think 41 I think is the issue that's coming out that's restarting the numbering from ages ago, where the book's, you know, almost 20 years old. And I dig it. I thought it was interesting to jump in with these, you know, characters not needing to know anything and just get a neat story.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. I mean, I'm not sure that I'm ready to jump into the regular series, but as a one-shot story, I thought it was really really interesting. I thought it held together really well. I like the art style. It sort of reminded me of like a sort of a cleaner, like Robert Crumb type art. So I kind of already placed this book a little bit outside comic book and more into like, I don't know, sort of alternative zine type more work. But, you know, I thought it was interesting. I definitely will check out if there's a couple issues of the early stuff on Comixology. I'll probably check that out. But as a one shot, I thought it was really well done. I totally got the story. I think I thought it was well put together.
All right. Well, that's so what you've learned this week is Marvel Now, not worth the price of admission, and other and books from other companies. Awesome. So 0 points for costume superheroes this week, and 1 point for sci-fi, 1 point for crime. thanks to Eric Stevenson for providing us the fodder for this week's show. Thanks to Brett for editing whatever he manages to get out of this episode. I will do my sign off. I came really close on my odds for the identity of the hooded man in Forever Evil. I thought I did well on points.
You did. You got it twice. That's right.
Out of 11 possibilities, one of which was just, you know, Wally West is just a flat out joke. I included him in every one of these odds lists. So out of like 10 or 11 serious candidates, it was a mashup of two of them. I thought I did well. I do listen to the last couple episodes of We Talk Comics. If you are behind, we're going to come back in a couple of weeks with the second part of the Scriptments once we have the guys together. And the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo is right around the corner. CECE, or no, CCEE, which is the same initials as the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, which is the same weekend. So if you are at either of those conventions, you can see me at Calgary, and you can see Matt at Chicago. And Chris, you'll be
absolutely.
Chris, will you be at Calgary, or will you be at the?
I might be. I still haven't decided. It looks like a dynamite lineup, but I got some other things going.
Possibly
on right
committed
now.
To the Lloydminster Comic and Entertainment Expo that's on that weekend as well.
Yeah, exactly. which features me in the Safeway parking lot handing out bucks. Yes. Redex thieves.
Probably
yes.
Best not to hand out some of the newer works from Image, because as far as new readers,
Revenge is awesome.
May be actionable if you hand that to an individual who has not asked for it. There may be legal ramifications. Just keep that in mind. All right, follow me on Twitter @CubReporterK. Chris, you want to do your sign off? We'll let Matt finish up.
Sure. I'm pressing download on Harlequin right now as we speak, so we might lose a connection, but I'm Chris_WeTalk on Twitter. Give us a shout. And Matt, why don't you do your plugs and hype our sponsor as much as possible, please.
All right. Well, I am PhotoCub on Twitter, and I am the senior editor for Comicosity.com. The best place for you to check out news and reviews and especially interviews. Been doing a lot of great stuff, got a lot of good stuff coming up. There will be an interview with Charles Soleil about Superman Wonder Woman coming up by the time this is posted. Got a lot of new stuff coming up from Archie Comics. I've been talking a lot to those guys and DC, and we've got a lot of other interviewers doing a lot of good stuff. So please check us out, and do look forward to C2E2, because I will be there and probably driving myself to drink, trying to cover everything as much as I can. But I do it for all of you, because I love you all, except Captain Marvel.
And it really takes the load off us, because nothing gets announced at Calgary, because it all gets announced at C2E2. So, but we look forward to seeing our friends at Boom will have a booth this year at Calgary that just got announced. So looking forward to that, and some we'll have some surprise stuff coming up for the show. We've already got some interviews lined up for that weekend. We're hanging out with a couple people after hours. I just got invited to a music and comic night, just an off-site event on the Saturday night. So it looks like Calgary's going to be a fun time. And Matt and I will be dueling Twitter as happens annually now with the Chicago and Calgary. All right, and we are. How's that spelled again? Mo does this so naturally. OUT.